Think big. Think positive. Never show any sign of weakness. Always go for the throat. Buy low, sell high. Fear, that's the other guy's problem. Nothing you have ever experienced can prepare you for the unbridled carnage you're about to witness. Right. Super Bowl, the World Series, they don't know what pressure is. In this building, it's either kill or be killed. Right. You make no friends in the pits and you take no prisoners.
No prisoners.
1 minute, you're up half a million in soybeans, and the next, boom, your kids don't go to college and they've repossessed your Bentley. Are you with me?
Welcome to Turner's Take Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Turner, author of Turner's Take. Hope everyone down in Florida is okay. Our friends, family, and clients down there. It's also September 11th, so all the families affected on that day 17 years ago. Our thoughts and prayers are with you too. So interesting. It's been an interesting trade this past week. I've had a lot of interest in orange juice. Arbob, some sugar because of there's some speculation that, you know, what can happen to Caribbean to their sugar crop. So whenever I have seen where myself in the past either made money or clients have done well, kind of trading those markets, I've always taken a part of that and written a check to, you know, the Red Cross or something like that. And if you've been riding OJ High or doing something with gasoline, I'm not saying what you should be doing with your money, but it's always a nice little thought if you are trading and kind of in you get into a good circumstance like that. I think it's pretty much, good karma to go ahead and take a little bit of that and send it to a charity you think it can help the most during these kinds of times. So just want to start the podcast off with that. If you haven't been with me before, again, my name's Craig Turner. You can visit me on the web at turnerstake.com. I'm on Twitter, and all my contact information will be in the show notes. Let's get to it. We'll talk macro first, just because I've been getting a lot of calls lately about the macro situation. There's been concerns about not just natural events like the hurricane and what it could do to the economy in the U.S. in certain segments, but also this whole thing with the United States and Korea, or North Korea, I should say. There's been a big gold trade because of that. You know, we've been talking about other things happening in Europe, Fed risk, what's going on with the president administration. I just want to say that, you know, when it comes to those kind of trades, you might see money flow. Like gold's a good example. We broke out probably around 1300 because of the, it was probably North Korea, you know, in the United States. And, you know, some tough words were spoken, and we broke out right above 1300 and went almost to 1365. Now gold's around 1335, and it's kind of filling that gap that we started off with from last week. Wouldn't be surprised if we tested 13 again, but if tensions are still high, you know, you could still see gold get support at 1300. What has been the most interesting thing about the macro view, and it's why I'm bringing it up, even though we talk mostly about grains, livestock, and energy, is the dollar. Always a big factor, right? And we've seen some good volume on buying the dollar here. And if we close above, we're at 91.5 right now in the December dollar index. But, you know, if we make a breakout here, like a close above 92.5 or something like that, or in that area, you could make that could be a trend reversal. So I kind of like the idea of getting long the dollar here on a breakout. It's something that you could try early with the tight stop, or you can just wait for the breakout. I'll be writing about it in my newsletter, Turner's Take. Going to be more active with that this week. So we'll see here. And that can have an influence on grains. One thing that has been disappointing, especially from a grain perspective, as the dollar has gotten weaker, we haven't seen the commodities get that much of a boost, especially corn, soybeans, and wheat, so that's been a little bit concerning, but hopefully we'll continue to see exports build here now that we're in export season, and a lower dollar should help that. So that's really the macro side. Gasoline, you know, let me touch on energies real quick before we move on over to the grains. Take a look at gasoline. Where is it? Arbob in December. We're up at 153. We were at lows about 125 in June. You know, the storm down in Texas really brought the gasoline market up. pretty good. I mean, you can definitely see that in the front month, the September contract, which really got out of hand pretty fast. But if you go back out to November and December, you know, if we see more crude production, they get the RBOB, the gasoline facilities online, we could see. I don't know, there may be some room for the downside here. So I don't talk about gasoline a lot, but sometimes, you know, this isn't a major shift in gasoline usage. It's really a temporary shortage, and eventually these places get online. Considering that we were about 126 in June, and now we're about 153 today, and this isn't, I'm speaking about the December contract in RBOB. Could be an interesting play. Could be an interesting play to the downside, whether it be futures or buying put spreads or selling call spreads, however you may have it. I'll have a couple ideas too. But I do like that. I think that's an interesting play here, and we certainly have come up enough. And you know, another part of trading sometimes is looking for catalysts. Like, what's the next catalyst? And without another bullish catalyst to come in for gasoline right now, considering we're towards the top of the range, the bearish catalyst in play could be just production coming online again. And as we get into the fall, we see less driving as we do over the summer. So probably have more bearish catalysts than bullish catalysts right now in the gasoline market and in the energy space. We are going to come into what's known as the shoulder month. And typically that's the time when we see a little bit less demand. You know, the shoulder months, they call it that, like September, October are two that come to mind, and then in like March, April, May, where the temperatures are just milder, so you don't see a lot of heating or cooling demand. Gasoline can be affected a little bit by it. Well, gasoline is really more of a summer kind of month, but especially for natural gas and crude, you don't usually see prices kind of stabilize, not a whole lot of action during those shoulder months. So I don't know. We'll keep an eye on the energies there, but I'm going to have a little bit more of a bearish view of probably crude and gasoline as we go further. Sometimes you can see buying in natural gas as we go into the fall, because it is a commercial or wholesaler's market, and they'll start to build stocks now for the anticipated, you know, distribution to what would be known like retail, which would be, you know, my house, for consumption for, let's say, November through February and March. But sometimes you can see natural gas get a little bit of a kick now as the commercial buying goes on now, or starts now at least in September and October in anticipation of the winter. But I don't know. We'll have to see. It's actually going to bring up a quick chart of December natural gas. Yeah, I mean, it's if we get a... I'll tell you what. Just looking at this December chart of natural gas, you'd have to think support comes in at 306. But if we break out above like 325 or 330, maybe it makes a run. That'd be interesting. So we'll keep an eye on that too. So those are the macro markets. We kicked off with those today just because of the events around the world and what's going on with the hurricane. Let's talk about the nitty-gritty here. Corn. I've been pretty neutral on corn here. We're at 357. I cannot get excited about it either way, to the bearish or bullish. I'm like, yeah, we got it at 345 recently, right at the end. I think last time when we talked last time, I was saying how we were coming to first notice day. Farmers had to figure out what they're going to do with deferred pricing, basis contracts. It was going to put pressure on the market. It did. We hit our lows. After all that, those decisions were made by the farmers and the old crop selling stopped, we were able to rally 15 cents. And here we are, you know, 350. 355 to 360 for corn kind of makes sense in here. My concern is, as now that old crop issue has been kind of dealt with, those are the hard decisions were made by the farmers, and that was weighing the prices down. New crop's going to be on its way in the next month or so, where harvest is going to keep on going. We're going to only accelerate from here. And there'll just be more decisions farmers have to make and how much they want to store. I'm sure we'll see some stored, some will be deferred price, some of it, you know, will be sold right off the combine. But that's going to happen probably this month in October. So I think it's, you know, we get down to 345 again, it's going to be a big support level. And I, you know, unless the farmers just completely capitulate and sell everything, I don't think they will. I think they got rid of what they had to just so they could store what's coming. But I also, it's hard to see us getting above 380, really. I had talked for a while before the last WASI report. We got a WASI report tomorrow. Before the last WASI report, I was talking how I liked selling like 380 straddles. I was talking to our farmer clients and saying, hey, you know, we're going to do that to collect some premium. We recently got out of those, took a little bit of a profit, but I ended up redoing it like at the 360 and the 370 strike, just depending on the farmer and what their thoughts were. Just because, you know, I can see us over the next couple of months trading 20 to 25 cents up or down from 360, but it's hard to see us trade 20, 25 or 30 cents up or down from 380. I just don't see the case for corn above 390 right now on the futures. But I could see, you know, 385 to 335. That kind of makes sense. Now, if the USDA comes out tomorrow and says, you know what, we are wrong on yields, we're really at 166, we'll have to roll our some positions. But I think we'll be down maybe to 168, 167 half. We're still going to be north of $2 billion on the carryout. And, you know, in corn, again, you know, we'll probably just trade sideways. You know, we're at 356 now, maybe 10 or 15 cents down, 10 or 15 cents up. I like selling straddles for farmers. I think it's a nice way to collect some time premium over the next month or two, while, quite honestly, your grain sits in storage, and you're probably not making any sales here anyways, unless you have to. And I can't blame you. Who wants to sell, you know, if December corn's at 355 and you got a 40-cent basis under, I mean, you're selling 315 corn. You know, what's the... You're only making those sales unless you need some cash flow, you got to pay some bills, or what do you have to do? That's really only what's going on there. So, yeah, I'm sticking to the game plan, collecting premium. We'll be doing that until things change. I don't see things changing between now and until we can really start talking about South American issues, which is a long way off. So that's where we're going to stay with the corn. I do like, if you are sold corn, and you want to start to think about re-ownership, if we get down below to 345 again or lower, you want to start putting on a position in corn, whether you're a speculator or you're a hedger that sold, you're a producer that sold corn and you're interested in buying back in a hedge account or something like that. I mean, I could get on board with 345 corn or lower. I really could. I mean, just from a historical and a value play. I'm not saying it can't go low. It could. But how much lower are we really talking here? I'm not ultra bearish on corn prices from where we are now. I think there's more upside than downside, but we do have to get through harvest. So when we'll see it, we'll see the selling come in. And for now, I like the short straddles to collect some premium. And if I were going to buy corn, I would just wait. You'll know it when you see it on the charts for the selling to come in because of the, you know, the harvest of the new crop. You know, when that happens across the Midwest, you'll see it. And maybe at that point, you start to look to buy. But that's how we're going to play that. Soybeans have been holding in here. 9.58. We're going to see the WASI report tomorrow. They're calling for, I think, the industry average. We had a little bit below. I think it was around 148. A lot of people are looking for. That would be good. It would help soybeans out. I still think we're going to be between $9 and $10. I can't see South America increasing soybean acreage. If they do, I can't imagine it being a lot. And also, I can't imagine them having a better crop next year than they did this year. So you would think at some level the initial estimates for South American beans will be lower than last year in some way, shape, or form. So yeah, I think the market knows that. I think that's why we're going to be above $9. It's going to be hard for beans to break above 10 on any kind of bullish news just because there is a lot of beans in the United States and global stocks, and it's not the time of year for beans to really to get that bullish. Now, if we get frost concerns in the north, soybeans are harvested later than corn typically, and if we do get some cold weather up north and some freeze, that could be a little bit bullish for beans, but again... I'm looking more of a $9 to $10 range. You could look at selling the short straddles. I don't like it as much like for corn. I'd rather buy the breaks or sell the rallies in beans. If you're really looking for a low-cost, low-margin way of playing it. Maybe I still kind of like just taking a flyer on January versus May soybeans, trading 17 to 18 cents carry on that. Unless soybeans really fall out of bed, I don't see us trading below 20 in the near future. Could. But if it did, that's 3 cents lower. I'm wrong on 3 cents. It's $150. If we do get serious issues with soybeans, there's one story that I've been hearing, not enough, but at least a little bit about, is the yields haven't been as good as they expected. However, I will say one caveat is farmers do tend to harvest their worst fields first and then kind of save the best for last. Don't blame them. I'd probably do it the same way. So some of those earlier reports we're probably on bad fields anyways, but we'll keep our eye on that and see if that continues to be a trend. As for the wheat, I still think at the end of the year of Q1, the Minneapolis wheat is going to be a big issue. I would not be surprised if Minneapolis wheat got some support after the WASDE tomorrow. It would be nice to see the USDA talk about harvested acres. I know they didn't make any changes to that last time, but they haven't changed harvested acres. There are definitely acres that are gone, that were planted, that were just were abandoned. And it would, you know, what would be interesting to see is when the USDA accounts for that, how does that change the balance sheet? December Minneapolis wheat, 6:30 would kind of be my line in the sand as we head into this WASDE report. If you want a cheap way to play that, I do like the March versus May Minneapolis wheat spread. I get a lot of questions on, Craig, why do you like that spread, you know, out of all the other spreads? The thing is, by March, if there's going to be a shortage of Minneapolis wheat, that hard red spring wheat, which I think there will be, by March, these mills up north in the Dakotas and in the area need that wheat. Because what's going to happen is there might be plenty of wheat right now, and commercials don't need it right now, but we're not going to make it, in my opinion, to the next cycle without having a shortage. And, you know, harvest for Minneapolis wheat, the spring wheat, is a long way off. Or for next year's crop is a long way off. So, you know, we have to make do with what we have now. It's fine now, but you come into January, February, March, and you're like, oh, well, we're not going to really have a new harvest for a couple of months. We got to make do with what we have. You got to get that wheat by March, because farmers start going in the field. They're not going to be around to sell. They're starting to do field work. They got to do planting, all that other stuff. So what happens sometimes is if there is a shortage, that March versus May can go a lot higher, because the industry, the mills and everyone else, the commercials, have to basically flesh out all that wheat in March, like get enough of it for the March delivery period to basically last until the next harvest. So that's why you tend to see that March-May spread in years when it's tight get bullish. Again, it's something I've been talking about. I know it's been, you know, we got some in at zero, and then we sold it when we got to 14. We bought some at 10. We're down at 2.5. I kind of like it around here at zero. I think the full carry on something like is maybe minus 10 cents. But if we do have a real shortage and we're at around 100 carry out and the commercials need it this spring, it could be big. I think you'd be patient with that. It's something that doesn't have a lot of margin associated to it. I wouldn't load the boat. I would put, you know, I like it as a position where you have it, you set it off to the side, you forget about it, and you go about your business doing other things. So I like it for re-ownership. I like it for spec. If you have any questions specifically about how we're going to get into it and where we are, you can always follow the newsletter or you can call me directly. So those are my thoughts on wheat. I still like Kansas City over Chicago. That's going to bounce around. You know, this Russian story about how big the Russian wheat crop is actually hurting that spread. And even so, we're still trying to get upward momentum here. I like it. I think it's going to play out. I have no problem rolling it over from every 3 months. I think at the end of the day, we're going to be 15, 20 cents Kansas City over Chicago. You know, if you can come in here and buy the lows, you look on the chart, we're at like about a minus 5, minus 4. I like buying the lows if we get in there. And if you want to day trade it or swing trade it, you can look for 5 or 10 cent rallies. If you're a longer-term player, you know, try to buy it towards the lows this year and hold it for, you know, as we go into go into the winter. So that's how we'll play that. I'm really surprised in the strength in the cattle market. There are some cases we made seasonal lows. Feeders up here in November at 150. There's been a lot of talk about all the cattle coming to the market, but also demand has gotten a lot better too. So it looks like the cash prices haven't been that great for live cattle. Feeders, there has been some demand in the country for them. That's what we're hearing. And then the beef prices have been steady. So I think cattle chops. One idea that I thought was pretty cool, December cattle. I think a straddle on that, like the 130 call, 130 put, was trading somewhere between 8.5 and 9. I mean, that if you're a producer looking to collect some premium, some option premium, that I thought was pretty interesting. Even on the spec side, I thought that was pretty interesting. I mean, 8.5 to 9 points on December cattle. You know, unless there's something crazy happens in the cattle industry, I'd be surprised to see it really go up that high or up that low, with basically demand strengthening but supply coming to the market. You think it would kind of cancel each other out a little bit over here. So that I'm kind of neutral on cattle also. In terms of currencies, just a quick recap here. I will be following the dollar, see if we can get a rebound. I'm going to be keeping an eye on the energies. I would like to get bearish on crude and RBOB, gasoline. For the cattle, I'm looking for neutral strategies, just like I am with corn, maybe collecting some option premium. Soybeans, I'm taking a wait and see, but because soybeans can be such a volatile market, and also remember this, every 6 months, the soybean industry always has a chance for a single point of failure in the global export market, meaning that we only produce soybeans in two regions of the world for global exports, the United States and South America. And if one of those locations has an issue, basically you got to produce 2 billion of soybeans in North America, you got to produce 2 billion of soybeans in, is that right, 2 billion? Hold on a second, I got to do my math real quick. I am wrong about that. You got to produce 4 billion soybeans roughly in North America, another 4 billion of soybeans down in South America to satisfy, you know, local and export demand around the world for beans. And every 6 months, you can have a potential for a huge hiccup. And if you do, then soybean prices can go high. Meanwhile, like wheat, you don't see that as much for wheat. You know, in wheat, you are harvesting wheat almost every month of the year in some region of the world. And corn is somewhere in the middle. Like you've got South America, you've got the United States and North America, but you also produce wheat, a lot of corn in the Ukraine, South Africa. There are just a lot of different places where you can do it with corn too. Not so much for wheat. And while soybeans could be kind of a problem child. So if there is one thing I would keep an eye on too is soybean production issues. If the balance sheet for the United States gets a little bit smaller, we have South American issues. I always have a bias in some way, shape, or form, bullishness in beans, just because of that phenomenon that market experiences, where there's only two centers for exports, and we're basically relying on a crop coming in every 6 months. So that's how we'll approach the markets going forward. I think I touched on everything. Yeah, I'm going to try to be a little bit more active on Twitter. I'm going to try to be doing these podcasts twice a week and also putting out Turner's Take Weekly twice a week with the links to the podcasts. And then for all the farmers out there, the clients that work with me, any of the trade ideas that we have, I'll put in Turner's Take Hedge, which is the market, ag marketing section. And then for the spec, it's the Turner's Take Market Alert. All right, have a great week, everyone, and hopefully talk to you soon.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels trading broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore, investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniel's Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniel's Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.